Hey everyone, welcome to one last bastion of science and data integrity. And today we got a super short for you, which will answer all your questions around the novel drug class that's been pumped for the last couple of years. And we're going to start with a very short piece on a new study from the Cleveland Clinic, which is fascinating, but not a surprise to many of us. And then we're going to go on to a piece of extraordinary propaganda from the medical authorities. It's incredible. And I'll show you a clip of it. And it was pushed widely and produced by a PR company, it looks like. And it's just incredible to watch. It actually is a form of, I would say, terrorism in a sense. So you're going to enjoy that. And then I'm going to go through the reality, as I always do, with government published data and figures. It is nonsensorable because everything I will talk about is published or peer-reviewed or actual data from government sources. But that doesn't stop it being extraordinarily revelatory. This one's a hot one, guys. So here we go. Now, first we'll take a look at the Cleveland new paper. Preprint is here. You can look it up if you wish. But Dr. Doug Corrigan did a great thread on it. I'll also put the link to that. And the summary essentially is they found an unexpected result. Well, unexpected to them. So the more doses you had of the novel RNA technology, the more likely you were over time to be infected with COVID. And this is from over 50,000 people in their study. And they did account for confounders and higher risk people, people who don't take it might have a higher risk, etc., etc. So the confounders were looked after. So don't worry about that. And they also noted that lots of other studies had seen essentially what they had just discovered. So they acknowledged that. And interestingly, they admit that they couldn't calculate the effectiveness of the product to reduce severe disease because there wasn't enough people who demonstrated severe disease. There was basically nothing worth looking at. So an obvious question from the good doctor is, if COVID is innocuous enough now that severe disease is so rare that it can't even be detected in a medication effectiveness study, and the number of doses of said medication increased the risk of acquiring COVID, then why do it? And it's a good question. Now, it's not too surprising for many of us because in mid-2021, official Israeli government data showed clearly that the applying of the medication did not change the infection outcome. So that was clear as day in the population data. And there were many studies at the time. I archived all of them. You can see cases in blue with no medication versus cases with the medication. They tracked each other all the way. And in fact, if anything, there is a signal that no medication had kind of lower hospitalization. But that could be an artifact. And again, many studies came out at the time, and here's another one. You can email the author. And again, we see that the fully medicated, there was no apparent benefit right through long-term tracking. So, oodles of data and publications showing no real transmission mitigation, which kind of defeats the whole purpose, one would say. But now let's look at the pseudo-terroristic video or PR or propaganda campaign that came out just the other day. And you can see on the screen on the left, the WHO tweet, which released this short video. And on the right now, I'll start playing it and prepare to be a bit shocked.
We have to recognize that anti-vaccine activism, which I actually call anti-science aggression, has now become a major killing force globally. During the COVID pandemic in the United States, 200,000 Americans needlessly lost their lives because they refused a COVID vaccine, even after vaccines became widely available. And now the anti-vaccine activism is expanding across the world, even into low and middle income countries. It's a killing force. Anti-science now kills more people than things like gun violence, global terrorism, nuclear proliferation, or cyber attacks. And now it's become a political movement. In the US, it's linked to far extremism on the far right, same in Germany. So this is a new face of anti-science aggression. And so we need political solutions to address this.
Wow. What do you think, guys? Incredible propaganda. And essentially, wall-to-wall fraudulent, I would say, from the data. But let's go on now, and we won't pick through the video. It's just too absurd to even analyze. But how could they possibly make these claims, even in a propaganda video? Well, let's now look at the Lancet study that got huge circulation, and it was a modeling study, and it claimed 20 million lives saved. And this is what that video is essentially using to create the propaganda. So here it is, and you can look it up yourself. And as I said, extraordinary and quite shocking to me after researching and studying thousands of published papers over the last few years. But look at the funding. HSBC, right. Glaxo, WHO, Global Fund to Fight AIDS. Yeah, they're all in up to their neck in it. Moderna, Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness. Oh, we know those guys. And again, WHO. So that's the funding. But let's hear Professor Fenton now from London. And he goes through and really simplifies why this study is utterly absurd and was actually in itself, I would say, a propaganda piece of analysis. Here we go.
Also note who funded the study. How did they get to the 20 million? They decided that in the beginning of 2021, this is how many lives would be lost to COVID if there was no vaccine. And they then compared that to the actual number of lives lost observed. I produced an analogy showing that this was like claiming I reduced the London temperatures by 60 degrees by turning on a fan in my garden at the end of July.
So there we have it from Professor Fenton. And of course he's correct. Here's the natural evolution of the novel member of the coronavirus family and its impact. And of course it would continue on and eventually level off naturally because of the huge build-up of population immunity over the couple of years and the multiple seasons. This is a natural evolution curve of impact. There's no question about that. But note how the Lancet paper decides at the introduction of the novel medication that this would not have happened. They say that suddenly the impact would have taken off up and to the right, even though we had already built a lot of immunity and continued to build it. They said this would happen, and therefore the benefit of the medication class saved all of this. And that's inherently absurd. I mean, you don't need to be a rocket scientist. An eighth grader could look at this and say, that's what would have happened, rough and tough, give or take. But this is what the modelling team said would have happened and then claimed all of this lack of happening to the novel medication class. So it's utterly absurd. So let's go on now and look at the impact of papers like this, right, with their absurdity in a peer-reviewed journal like Lancet, the effect they have. And we'll look at a short clip in the European Parliament where Lancet is used. And Lancet, this one, was used all over the world to justify utter unscientific absurdity. So let's look at the European Parliament leveraging this nonsense paper.
I think the very relevant and respected medical journal, Lancet, I'm sure you are aware of it, published the very clear data saying that vaccines saved 20 million lives in the first year of the vaccination.
And there you go. A whole pile of junk science, anti-scientific garbage modelling used in the European Parliament and all over the world to claim an absurd outcome. I can't make it any simpler. So what we'll do is we'll have a quick look now at the actual risks of certain age groups from Irish government CSO Statistics Office data. Again, uncensorable and brutal reality. Let's just have a look. So here we have a summary I did a long time ago, and it's from the actual Statistics Office, right? So this is actual data from the government. And as you can see, under 25, they had less than 5 apparent deaths with a positive PCR. So they just said less than 5. They wouldn't give us the number. So it could have been 0. So for under 25s, from their data over 2 full seasons and with massive positivity in each season, as recorded, there was less than 5 in 1.65 million, right? That age group demographic. So around a 1.5 million risk. And that's with a positive PCR, not necessarily driven from COVID. So it would be a lot smaller if you took just healthy people and they were bona fide definitely from COVID. So even at this inflated risk, it's a quarter the risk of death from falling down stairs or stepladders from US risk table data, right? Under 50s as a broad group, 1 in 50,000 risk, which is around the risk of death from fire or smoke. And in Ireland, a great representative population, 5 million people, perfect data recorded, 1 in 7,500 risk for under 70s, around the risk of death from poisoning in US tables. And this is with a positive PCR. It would be much, much lower if it was an actual COVID-driven death. And these risks will be much, much lower if you only included people without serious comorbidities. And the last thing I'll do is I'll just blow up that under 25s, because we know that the novel medication class now is going right down to age zero, essentially, in many areas of the world. Not in Sweden or the Nordics or many other countries. They're not pushing it at all, really, below 50, but in many areas. So here's the 1 in 500,000 risk for under 25s from the Irish published data. That's what we're talking about here, guys. So now that we've covered the lack of transmission mitigation, clearly, and we've used Professor Fenton to help us cover the actual data around the reduction in severity of outcome, and we've taken a snapshot from excellent Irish government data on the actual risks involved, put it all together, and I'll finish with letting you watch again the propaganda clip, because in the light of the actual data and the reality, I think you'll agree it's quite stunning.
We have to recognize that anti-vaccine activism, which I actually call anti-science aggression, has now become a major killing force globally. During the COVID pandemic in the United States, 200,000 Americans needlessly lost their lives because they refused a COVID vaccine, even after vaccines became widely available. And now the anti-vaccine activism is expanding across the world, even into low and middle income countries. It's a killing force. Anti-science now kills more people than things like gun violence, global terrorism, nuclear proliferation, or cyber attacks. And now it's become a political movement. In the US, it's linked to far extremism on the far right, same in Germany. So this is a new face of anti-science aggression. And so we need political solutions to address this.
So there you have it. What a wicked web we weave, eh? So, as I said, a form of kind of propagandistic, kind of bioterrorism, a kind of fomenting anger and resentment against a subset of the population who ironically turned out to be the ones who were rational and followed the data. So very, very seedy indeed. But what can we do? This is the world we live in. So it's important that we continue to get out actual data and proper inference, kind of scientific journalism that goes where the legacy media sadly don't go anymore. And I think it's a really important mission, and huge thanks to all those who have supported me in pulling the data, analysing the data, and getting out a clarified, simplified message on what's actually going on in the world today. So huge appreciation for your support, and anyone else who can jump on board and support me, the links are down below. We're going to keep getting out the reality for people to actually answer all those questions in a confusing world where the legacy media and the corporate sponsored media kind of have a fire hose, a torrent of misinformation and confusing obfuscation pumped at the people 24/7. So thank you, guys.